thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. We are your hosts, Lee Patch and the Fellas. We are also part of Sports Journey, so make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV teams. All right, Sunday, Hall of Fame coach of the Georgetown Hoyas, John Thompson, passed away. Coach Thompson was the first black head coach to win a national championship. Ray and Will, where were your thoughts when you heard the news Monday morning?
I'll let Ray go first.
Hey, Will, you already know what it is. Remember when Coach was on the radio, we used to kind of have frequent dialogue with him, and he called me Cleveland State T. That's what he used to call me, because I always picked Cleveland State when they went to the tournament or whatever. And I remember the year Blake Griffin, he was like the biggest star in college basketball, man. And Coach was riding with Oklahoma to win it all. And we had like a back and forth on the radio about who was going to win. And he was down to earth. That's what I took from it. But, of course, historically, especially what we're seeing now around the country, he represented for black coaches. He paved the way for many. And it's a huge loss for the sports world and the DMV.
That was great, Ray. But I'll give my thoughts. If you grew up in the D.C. metropolitan area and you were born in the 80s, to me, there are two important black men that kind of, when you think of D.C., their names are synonymous. And that is John Thompson Jr. and the former mayor for life, Marion Barry. John Thompson Jr., to me, he was black history. He embodied everything that we talk about when we talk about a dignified leader, a dignified man. He's just an amazing person. You know, I was a huge fan of his as a coach and at Georgetown. I actually had a family member who played under him while he was at Georgetown, and I had an opportunity to meet him once. He was just, even though he was a huge giant, he was just a kind, nice soul, just a great man. So, you know, he'll definitely be missed, and my prayers go out to his family and his former players and all of his all of those that he touched during his 78 years here on earth.
Yeah, I think you all said it, man. You know, growing up in this area, being a big Hoyas fan, you know, that it hit me hard, man. I met him due to a friend. She worked at a radio station that when he was a part of the radio station. And I got an opportunity to get an autograph by him. And it was like I was like in awe, because he's very intimidating, to be honest with you. And maybe because, you know, for me, I grew up idolizing him and just what he did for the area and what he did, you know, for the community. And just meeting him, and you know, he was joking around, and he could tell I was nervous. You know what I'm saying? He was playing on it, and we both had a nice little laugh, and he'll be missed, man. He's just that guy to me that sometimes things just fit when you put on the TV and you expose the basketball. You know, we all love the hoop, we all love basketball, but something about, you know, putting on the TV and watching the Hoyas on WTTG at the time, from your Fox 5 or whatever, and then seeing the Hoyas playing ball just there, and seeing, you know, Coach Thompson walking the sidelines, and you know what I mean, and just, you know, yelling at officials or just going back at the, you know, if it's Syracuse, going back at Bayheim, it's just, you know, that experience, just watching that and seeing it, man, it was something special, man, something to behold. All right, but we got a guest, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. As part of our PG Baller series, we will have former Georgetown Hoyas Austin Freeman on the show. We'll also talk about Coach John Thompson. Finally, we'll continue talking about the great John Thompson. Patrick Waring from the NBS Sports Hour podcast will join the show to discuss this. But first, hey, Ray, you want to introduce our host? I mean, our guest?
Absolutely. Our guest, of course, is a native of Prince George's County by way of Mitchellville, Maryland. He's a DeMaster Hoops alum that helped lead the Stags to multiple WCAC championships while becoming a two-time All-Met selection and being chosen for the Jordan Brand Classic and McDonald's All-American game in 2007, where he played alongside future Hoyer teammate Chris Wright, as well as another DMV baller, Nolan Smith. He would go on to play collegially at Georgetown University, where he achieved Big East All-Freshman Team honors and was a first-team All-Big East selection in 2011 while being coached by JT3, John Thompson III. Since his playing days as a Hoyer, he's had a successful professional career playing both here in the States and overseas. Now, to add to his resume, his guest of the Urban Sports Team, welcome to the show, Austin Freeman. What's good, bro?
What's going on, guys? What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure for you. Thank you for being on, man. We appreciate you. So let's get right into it. What came to your mind, you know, when you heard the news that Coach Thompson passed?
It was tough, man. It was tough just because, you know, I was around him for 4 years, 4 years of my life, pretty much. I was around him. Just being around him and just seeing, you know, when he walks in the building, I remember he was just walking to our practice and, like, literally almost practice would just stop and, like, go into, like, complete silence when he walks in. Just because of the you know, the guy he was and, you know, what he stood for Georgetown and, you know, D.C. basketball. This pretty much basketball period, you know, he was just, you know, it was just a tough loss, you know, and just tough to hear, you know, what happened, man. Yeah, it was real tough.
So did you, Austin, go ahead, Will.
I want to ask you, so as a freshman at practice at McDonough, and the first time John Thompson Jr. walks into the gymnasium, what was that experience like for you, or your first interaction with him, if you could remember it?
My first interaction with him was, I'm going to just tell you about the first time ever just, you know, even seeing him and being around him was my sophomore year in high school, wearing this like program called the NCAA First Team. And the NCAA First Team is like a program where, like, it's maybe like 200, you know, kids, high school kids, you know, we all have the potential to, you know, be playing Division I basketball. And we had the likes of like Greg Oden and Eric Gordon and just a lot of these guys that are in the NBA right now were all in this program. So the program, you know, was just talking about pretty much, you know, the NCAA and, you know, pretty much just keeping us on game of what's going on. And, like, you know, from the NCAA being the business and what you should be looking for when you're in the NCAA, what's going to be around and what's going to happen and all this stuff. It's like a 3-day conference. We play basketball maybe one day at the conference. So the whole time, you know, most guys looking like, oh, we play basketball here, yada, yada. Nope, we're just in a conference, play basketball maybe one day. So he was our guest speaker, maybe the first day of the conference. So, like, we get there, you know, we have a conference, whatever, we get to chill, whatever, and then the conference starts tomorrow. So, you know, us being high school kids, you know, we up late, you know, having fun and stuff like that. And then, you know, we got the conference in the morning. So it's probably like 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, we tired being up or whatever. And he's tall. He comes in. You know, John Thompson, he comes in. He sits down. He doesn't even, like, stand up at the podium like most of the people did. He sat down. He sat down on the stage. So he's talking and, you know, he, you know, tell us about everything. Most of the stuff he was actually even talking about was, you know, most of the stuff that – you know, I ended up hearing when I got to school. So he's talking, and a kid yawns, like yawns in the middle of his speech, and he goes off. I'm talking about, like, don't you dare yawn while I'm talking here, son, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the middle of the conversation. We're like literally like fighting sleep, and, you know, people yawning and stuff like that, like. Once he said that, like,
if you could have seen like most of the guys in there, they were like trying to fight DeJuan and fight the shoot while he was talking, dog. It was the funniest thing ever. So yeah, that was my first ever time like even seeing him. I've always heard about him, but that was my first time ever seeing him. My first ever interaction with him. My first ever interaction was, you know, I was being recruited by Georgetown at the time. This was actually right before I committed. I committed my junior year, so I'm at Midnight Madness. So, you know, I'm just chilling at Midnight Madness, having a good time. And, like, kind of like in the middle before, like, they introduced all the players, they called me into the office and we were just talking. So me and Coach Thompson and Kevin Brodus, who was recruiting me at the time, we were just in the office talking, and then he comes in. And, like, you see him when he walks in, like, me, my mom, my dad, and my sister. So we in there, he walks in there, and it's like, it was like the craziest thing ever, because, like, it was just like, if you see him up close, like, he's huge. He's huge, man. Like, it was just like,
yeah, when
he walks in, he's a big man. So like, we walked in there, dog. You like, wait, this dude really was out there coaching Pat and AI and all that, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking. And then comes in there and he's talking. He barely talking to me. He's talking to my mom. He's talking to my dad. Even asked my little sister questions. He barely talked to me, but like the things he was saying was just like, you know, how my parents were like, you know what? Regardless of the decision you make, son, if you go to Georgetown, dog, we're all the way comfortable with you going there just because of him. Not because of JT3, not because of Kevin Brodus, because of him. Just the things he was saying, that, you know, what Georgetown stood by and what he stands by and, you know, what JT3 is all about and pretty much what Georgetown is all about. And, you know, kind of like after that Midnight Madness, I committed like maybe 3 days after that. So he was probably a big part of my recruitment process and why I committed too. So, yeah.
So, bro, we had Phoenix Suns head coach Monty Williams on the show last week. You know Monty from PG as well.
Yeah.
And he talked about Coach Thompson. And you just mentioned AI. I'm just pointing out how these prominent names in sports, you know what I'm saying, they always highlight John Thompson, how big he was and instrumental he was in their career. Even Kevin Ollie, when UConn won the chip and he was coach, he just thanked Coach Thompson for paving the way. Now it just happens, it just so happens that Coach Thompson was broadcasting. He was covering the game that day,
right.
And he gave Coach a shout out like right off the jump. So for you, just seeing these prominent folks that he's impacted all over the best, what do you think his legacy is?
What his legacy is?
Yeah, like in your opinion.
His legacy.
Tough one.
Yeah, it is. His legacy, I would say he's one of like the, you could say like he's the godfather of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You can put that there. It's the godfather
That's
of basketball.
Big. Not just here, but everywhere.
Yeah.
He's the godfather of basketball.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you can say that. Yeah, man, I mean, he impacted so many people. Like,
mm-hmm.
You can just hearing the Allen Iverson speech, like, just him telling him that, yo, you changed my life, is probably one of the biggest things you can hear from somebody saying to another man. Especially, you know, the situation Iverson was in, you know, Coach Thompson actually giving him that chance to get out and be somebody. Like, that's huge, man. That's real huge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the – and then Iverson becoming, you know, this Hall of Fame basketball player,
all because Coach Thompson gave him that chance. Is, you know, if you really sit back and think about it, it's crazy, man. It's crazy just to hear that, I think.
Yeah, I think Alonzo Mourning said the same thing, too. Said, like, he basically saved his life. You know what I mean? Like, and the cool thing about Coach Thompson, I think you see it, like, even in the Hall of Fame speeches, right? Usually, you don't see often where, like, your superstar, you know, your superstar players of your program, all when they're doing their Hall of Fame speech, all bring you to the table. That doesn't happen often. Like, that really doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, Carolina, Dean Smith, for a lot of the folks in Carolina. But when you look at Georgetown, you know, usually, and these guys have been coached by, like, guys who kind of, you know, cultivated them in the NBA. You know what I mean? Like, Hewitt had Pat Riley, so did Alonzo. Larry Brown was, like, influential in AI's development in Philadelphia. But they all bring John Thompson, their college coach.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. Coach Thompson, man, he impacted so many of those guys at Georgetown also.
Mm.
Dan, they say it a lot too. Those guys say he changed life, their life. And, you know, just hearing from, you know, guys that didn't even go to Georgetown that he impacted is, you know, that's why I would say, like, you can call him, like, the godfather of basketball.
Oh, definitely. All right, man. Well, let's get into your PG hooping. You're like your PG journey in terms of, you know, what you did in basketball and whatnot. So PG basketball has finally received its notoriety due to Kevin Durant's documentary, Basketball County in the Water. First off, did you watch it? And if so, like, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I watched it. I thought it was pretty good. You know, it kind of put PG basketball on the map. I wish it was just a little bit longer. You know, I feel like we missed out on a couple more people. I felt that it was good. It was something that, you know, I felt like the people needed to see. Because, you know, just think about it. Most of the time when, you know, you growing up playing and, you know, you go into, like, these different camps and you playing in these different tournaments and stuff like that growing up, you know, most of the time teams would be like, oh, y'all from D.C. or y'all from Maryland. And the first thing they think about when they say Maryland, like, oh, y'all from Baltimore. Like, you don't ever really hear, like, oh, y'all from PG County or, like, what part of Maryland y'all from. They just, you know, put us in, like, the D.C. or they put us in the Baltimore category.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just felt like this documentary, you know, it puts PG County on the map. It actually shows, like, you know, where guys are actually from, you know, instead of just, you know, categorizing us with D.C. and putting us in Baltimore. That's it. So.
Yeah, I thought that was really important. But also, you just mentioned, like, you wish certain people were also included in the documentary. Like, who would you have wanted in a documentary?
That's a good question.
Or featured more.
I feel like probably more the older guys, I think. You know, just showing, you know, where it all really started. I get it. They show little bits and pieces of that, but, like, more so the older guys, paying that homage towards them. Because yes, we right now we do have a lot of guys in the NBA from the area, but I feel like we gotta also, you know, pay homage to those guys that, you know, paved the way for, you know, these guys to, you know, be playing in the NBA right now and stuff like that. I think so. Yeah, more so the older guys.
So, all right, so go right, go
you,
right.
You strike me as a laid-back dude, you know what I'm saying? Like, you, even when you played ball, you seemed like you was real chill on the court. You played some big rivalry games, such as against Syracuse back when Johnny Flynn was there. Y'all had some good battles. But you also got to play against Maryland, and that's one rivalry we just don't get here in the DMV enough. We need more Maryland-Georgetown games. So
when we had Walt on the show, Walt Williams, he was like, yeah, man, we'll be talking trash. We see each other. Was it like that with you? Like, were you considering Maryland as a rival? And did y'all talk a lot, or you just kind of like went about your business?
Well, at that time, I'm not even going to like really try to. I'm not even really talking shit right now. So,
Let's go.
I'm not really talking shit right now. But Maryland wasn't even really that good.
Keep it real.
At that time, not really. They weren't that good. So, mm-hmm. like, I mean, yes, Gravis was there, and Gravis did his thing at Maryland. Mm-hmm. Like, not taking nothing away from him. And I had a couple things. I had a couple friends that was on that on Maryland. But Maryland wasn't as good as. as Georgetown at the time. So we weren't really talking trash or anything like that. But we happened to play Maryland my sophomore year in the Old Spice Challenge in Florida. We knew what it stood for. We knew what it was all about playing Maryland just because, you know, we both from around the way. So, but just that time, Maryland just wasn't as good. So we weren't really thinking it was like a rivalry or anything like that. We just knew that, you know, we both from the area and we don't want to come back knowing that Maryland beat us. So we ended up beating Maryland by almost 40 out there. So
he was real humble with that. We beat him by 40, basically.
We beat him by 40.
Yeah.
And, you know, we understood that, you know, it was Maryland, Georgetown, but at that time, it wasn't really a rivalry or anything like that. We wanted to play Maryland every year, but the thing was, where are we going to play? Mm. They was talking about neutral sites or, you know, they never really talked about like a home at home. Like, we play at home and play Maryland at home. Because I guess people felt like, you know, it wouldn't really be a home game for each team because, you know, a bunch of Georgetown fans would be at the Maryland game, or a bunch of Maryland fans would be at the Rodman Center. So it was more so like trying to play at a neutral site, but I didn't really understand that either. But it was just always we couldn't get that game to play with Maryland, except for if it was like a tournament or something like that. So.
Now, that used to get Coach Thompson fired up, bro. I remember when y'all blew them out, and he was like, it's not even a story around here. He was mad. He was like, if Maryland won that game, it would have been on the front page of the Washington Post. He was like, man, they disrespect my Hoyas. And that's why I thought it was dope, because I knew that while it wasn't necessarily a rivalry, it should have been. And it's great to get your perspective, man. We have to poke fun at some Terps with that one. You know, I know you say you weren't talking, but hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, no, Bob.
Austin, let me ask you.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. But
no, I mean, yeah. No, I mean, at the end of the game, at the end of the day, we still won. So my career against Maryland is 1-0. So I mean, I can talk back. I know I didn't lose to Maryland. So
I know that's right.
Austin, where did you go in either Prince George's County or in the DMV in general, just for your best to get the best level of competition, you know, open rec or street ball? Where did you own your game at?
Most of the time, I mean, I was playing up the run and shoot. Playing up the run and shoot, playing county basketball. I was playing with Bowie at the time.
Okay.
My teams were, you know, we was winning championships and stuff like that. I was playing with me and Nolan Smith. I was on the same county team for, I want to say, about 3 years. We had an NFL player on our team. His name Marcus Gilbert. He played with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We had a bunch of good guys, probably like 8-9 of us playing on the same county team. And we probably played on the same team for probably like, I said like 6-7 years. It was like 8 black kids and one white dude was our coach. Well, actually 8 black kids, we had one white dude, and we had a white coach. And like, I would say around the area, like, people used to hate us just because of, you know, it was 8 of us. We had this one white boy that could shoot. and our white coach. And our white coach used to talk probably the craziest shit to the parent. Like, he was always fired up on our team. Like, he, like, people used to really hate our teams. And we used to, you know, we used to go out and win and stuff like that. But, like, I would say, like, just him coaching us, people used to hate it. Like, used to really hate it. Because it's like, yo, how did he get these kids and how are they beating our teams like this? Like, yo, it's some of the crazy stuff in the county at the time. But, yeah, that's where I used to, like, really, you know, like, growing up was county basketball, AAU, you know, just playing in just playing up the run and shoot. And then I also had a cousin who played college basketball at Wichita State in kind of like towards the end of the 80s. So he was probably one of the biggest influences on me, you know, playing basketball and taking it serious because of, you know, he was that cousin that was like, you know what, you never gonna beat me. Like, regardless of how old I get or how old you get, you never gonna beat me. So he was the one that always used to push me to, you know, just always get better. And he introduced me to playing against like older guys, and, just trying to play as hard as possible. Just try to earn the respect from, you know, the older guys. Because, you know, the young dude out there playing, you know, you just running up and down, barely touch the basketball sometimes.
Just getting exercise, yeah.
Yeah. Hustling, going to get the rebound, but passing it to the older guys so they can shoot and stuff like that. So, and he also showed me, like, you know, just, you know, having the confidence to, you know, play my game. And just, you know, being confident in what I do pretty much. So he was a big influence on, you know, me growing up and playing basketball. And my father, too. Those are probably one of the two big influences on me, you know, growing up and playing and stuff like that.
So fast forward to your days at the Master. Talk a bit about what that experience was like, why you chose to go there, and Where does your DeMatha teams rank? You know, you guys won a lot. You barely lost in your DeMatha career. But if you talk to dudes like Jeremy Grant or Quinn, they'll tell you their squad was the best. Speak on that. And I guess what was it like playing in such a historic program, you know, just in high school?
All right. So my DeMatha career started in Little Rocky. So we got summer league. And We were having like summer league practice, and, you know, this was my first varsity summer league practice because I started playing JV, or I was on the JV summer league practice, and, you know, I pretty much played really well and kind of dominated to the point where he was like, you know what, nah, you're not going to do this. You're going to play varsity. You're going to play in the summer with varsity. So that was my first summer league practice with varsity. We're doing 3-man weeks. You know, first 4 people go, and they dunk it in the 3-man league. Coach Jones comes to me like, yo, you better dunk it. So I'm like, all right, bet. Like, I can do that. 3-man weave, I get the pass to go dunk. I take a step, and I jump. And all I heard was pop. I land. Like, I'm still standing. This is probably a little graphic a little bit. But, like, my knee or my bone on my knee is kind of, like, trying to pop out of my skin type thing. So I fractured my patella tendon. Going into my freshman year at DeMatha in summer league practice. So that whole summer, I'm in a cast. Like, right before school started, I get my cast off. Like, kind of like maybe a month before school started, I get my cast off. And I'm rehabbing, get ready. And you know, the lady's like, you know what, you probably won't be ready or 100% until maybe December. So I'm like, wait, hold up, what? So I probably won't even play at all. Like at all. That's what I was thinking. She's like, he probably won't be ready till December. So I was like, is there a way I can, like, you know, kind of like speed this up, like, to, you know, maybe be ready before that? She's like, yeah, it's probably going to be the hardest, you know, month of your life, but we can do that for you. So I was like, all right, fine. Not really knowing what I was really getting myself into, but, you know, I rehabbed for that month, probably like maybe was the hardest rehab that I've ever had in my life, like ever. Like, it was the worst pain, the worst, you know, just the worst stuff I had to go through for that. And so I ended up getting ready before trial started. So I was like, I want to say I was 100%, but I was like, you know, I had my leg back. So I was probably like maybe like 90% before the season started. So I was able to start working out with the team and stuff like that, the preseason workouts and stuff. And, you know, trials came and I had a good trial. And at the time, the way Coach Jones made it seem like I was just going to play JV and be able to, you know, sit with varsity. That was the thing he was talking about. I felt like, you know, I want to say like maybe like the third or fourth day of tryout, me and this other freshman who was like my best friend to this day, Jeff Peterson, he put us on a team and we didn't lose that day in trials. Me and him and three other guys, we didn't lose that day in trials. The point where he came to me and him, or he took me up into the office, probably told him the same thing. He was like, dog, there's no way we can have you play JV. There's no way. Because what we saw today was probably, you know, one of the best things we've seen in a while. There's no way you guys are going to play JV. You guys are going to play varsity. So all to say, like, you know, got hurt going into my freshman year and still was able to make the varsity team. I'm not going to say that freshman year at DeMatha wasn't great because, you know, we started off rocky. We ain't really went like that at the beginning. But you could tell with our team that, you know, every day we got better. We was getting better to the point where, you know, we started rolling. We won like 9 in a row in the conference. And like you just tell, we was getting better. You could just with our guys, like, you know, Najee Munson, that our starting point guard, he was a sophomore. We had Jeff Allen, that was a sophomore at that time. Mm-hmm. We had Mamadi Diani, he was a junior. Desmond Adigie was a junior. Jason Green was a junior. We had a lot of guys on that team that, you know, we were still young at the time, but you could just tell, like, by next year, you knew. Ain't nobody was going to fuck with us at that time. By sophomore year, nobody was going to mess with us. So that's how good our team was. We were just young. And every day, I was probably kind of want to say, like, everybody's first real year playing in the WCAC at that time and playing the schedule that we had at that time. So so we get into the playoffs my freshman year. We end up losing to O'Connell in the semifinals. They was good that year. They had Dave Neal, Marcus Ginyard, Fred Stanback, Eric Schmidt. Funny thing about Fred Stanback. Fred Stanback might have been the greatest, I don't know, I want to say like maybe 14-year-old I've ever seen in my life. He was probably the best I've ever seen. He was playing with Landon Boys and Girls Club. It was the first time I ever seen him play, man. I thought he was league right there in this. I thought he was probably one of the best players I've ever seen. But O'Connell, you know, they had Fred stand back and, you know, Marcus Ganger and Eric Smith and all them. And they beat us in the semifinals. But then sophomore year came, you know, I kind of had to grow up at the time because he threw me into the starting lineup at that time. So we ended up losing two games. We had like a national schedule that year. We ended up losing two games, going 29-2, almost actually losing in the WCAC semifinals to Chris Wright. They almost got us, but we ended up prevailing and winning that game. But yeah, junior year, we lose. We lost Jeff Allen. He ended up going to Oak Hill. We lost close to like 8 Division I guys. Mm. Even some of the guys on the bench went D1 that barely played, but ended up, you know, being, you know, top scorers in their conferences at the when they left the Mather. So that's how crazy my sophomore year team was. We had a guy named Martell McDuffie who maybe played like 6-7 minutes off the bench for us, and then went to Radford and was averaging like 18 his whole career at Radford. Like, that's how crazy our team was my sophomore year. But junior year, you know, we ended up losing. We lost one game. We had a whole new, pretty much, group of guys on that team. Me and Nigel were like the only two starters. We had Dre Grant, you know, the older brother of Jeremy and Jaren. He was on our team. He didn't really play that much sophomore year, but junior year was the year he came in. He was starting. My man Jeff Peterson, who was on varsity with me since a freshman, he was officially just starting on the team now. And we had a football player, Kenny Tate, was our starting foreman. And we had Chris Braswell coming off the bench. We had another one of my best friends, Isaiah Tate, was on that team. Ended up going to George Mason. My junior year, we had a bunch of guys, man. Like, same thing as like sophomore year, just a little bit better. We went 34-1. And the one game we lost was to O'Connell, which was, you know, it was kind of weird that we lost that game, but it's the way it goes sometimes. And senior year, was probably, we lost like 5 games. But at that time, like, the schedule that we was playing was way crazier than my sophomore and junior year. Because now, all of a sudden, like, we top 10 in the country and stuff like that. So the schedule got even crazier. And, you know, the five games we lost were all from, you know, playing that national schedule. All, you know, lost to end up losing to O.J. Mayo, and we lost to Scoop Jardine and Rick Jackson and all that stuff. Like, we lost those games. We ended up, you know, running through the WCAC pretty much. Pretty much, you know, the Mather career, I mean, it was great, man. It was great playing with all those guys, you know, going through that season, those seasons. You know, every season was a learning experience for me, I would say. You know, just watching myself mature and grow up as a man. And I commend Mike Jones for that, just for even giving me that chance. Giving me that chance when, you know, I hurt my knee and we didn't even know what was going to happen. You know, we thought December, I got better. He gave me that chance on varsity, you know, he gave me a chance to play, show my talents. I really respect him for that. And, you know, to this day, you know, I keep in contact with him. You know, now I'm even on his coaching staff now at the Mather. So, he was just, you know, another big part of, you know, my growing process and being playing basketball. Yeah.
Go ahead. Would you want to say something, Ray?
Nah, go ahead, bro.
All right. So at Georgetown, you were on the All Big East freshman team. You were second. You were second team All Big East as a junior, and first team All Big East as a senior. How would you describe your time playing for the Hoyas?
funny thing. So going into Georgetown, you know, I was kind of like every, you know, 18-year-old going into college thinking, you know, and being an All-American and stuff like that, coming out of high school thinking, oh yeah, I'm gonna go up there and, you know, I'm gonna do my thing. Like, you know, I'm gonna go up there, I'm gonna get my shots, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And not really paying attention to the offense at the time. Not really, you know, knowing the Princeton offense. I'm like, okay, yeah, we run the Princeton, but what that mean, kind of? That's how I went into it. Until we got into preseason workout. And, you know, we even playing in the Kenner League. In the Kenner League, we not even playing like how we play at Georgetown. So I'm like, all right, bet, I'm going to come. Kenner League, I'm playing well, and, you know, doing my thing in Kenner League and stuff like that, feeling good about myself. And then, you know, preseason workout started. And we backdoor cutting and working on the passes of the backdoor cutting and doing all types of stuff, you know, that just, you know, going into it, you like, man, I don't got to do all this and stuff like that. But even though we still backdoor cutting, I'm like, all right, well, I'm still going to be able to get my shots and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we actually get to, like, practice. And it was not anything like I thought it was going to be. One time I took a jump shot, like out the offense. I got it on the, they threw it to me on the wing, and I like got into my shit and shot a jump shot and made it. And Coach JT3 blows the whistle and is like, hey, good shot. But you see that big motherfucker down there? Roy Hibbert. You see that big motherfucker down there? Throw him the ball every time. And then when he gets it, cut. So that was my introduction into college basketball. My freshman year. When you see Roy Hibbert posting up and he's open, throw him the ball. So... So, yeah, that was my introduction at the time. So, you know, I started throwing it into him and cutting. I mean, it worked. And he would pass it to me when I cut, get layups and games and stuff like that. But, you know, it was nothing that I thought it was going to be. But, yeah, you know, pretty much that freshman year, you know, it was a learning process. You know, I tried to do whatever I could to, you know, help the team win. You know, just being a freshman and stuff like that. And that whole time, I thought I was going to be coming off the bench and, you know, like, helping that way until, like, I want to say, like, maybe the 10th game going into that season. Coach calls me into the office, and he's just like, yeah, so we're going to start you now. How do you feel? I'm like, all right. Thanks, Coach. And he's like, all right, okay, cool. All right. And, like, we pretty much stepped off. So after that, you know, I was starting ever since then. But, yeah, that freshman year was a grind, you know, just, you know, playing Saturday, then playing Monday. And then it's not like we're playing, DePaul every day. We're playing Villanova on Saturday, playing Pittsburgh on Monday, playing Syracuse again that Saturday. Like, pretty much, because, you know, the Big East, how they did it was Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. I mean, Saturday, Monday type thing. So, you know, just that grind of the Big East was an adjustment, I would say. Because, you know, those 4 years, the Big East was putting in 9, 10, 11 teams in a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Big East is hell, like, those years. Yeah, especially that freshman year, just getting adjusted to that was was crazy. And then just having those older guys like Patrick Ewing Jr., John Wallace, and Big Roy, Jesse Sapp, you know, just guys who've been through the fire and played in the, you know, that year, the year before that, they went to the Final Four. So just to have those guys there, you know, helping me out was, you know, was helpful for me.
So,
and then, you know, like sophomore year, you know, just mm-hmm. Things were just a little different that year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all our seniors were gone. We had one senior that year, and pretty much that year, you know, our guys had different agendas. I ain't going to sugarcoat anything. We all had different agendas.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Chris were now sophomores. Our freshman year, we just watched, you know, probably 85% of our McDonald's class going to the NBA draft our freshman year, you know, from the Derrick Rose and the Mike Beasley to the OJ Mayo, like to mm-hmm. the Kevin Love,
mm-hmm.
you know, pretty much the top five picks were our class, pretty much, just to see them go, you know, into the NBA draft. And in that same year, you know, Jared Bayless goes. And it was just a bunch of guys that you're just seeing those guys going into the draft that year, you know, motivated us to be like, you know what? Well, this is our sophomore year. Look, we're going to have to try to get out of here pretty much.
Because,
you know, pretty much this sophomore year, you know, pretty much our whole class is gone after this. So, we want to try to get out. So that was, you know, that was kind of like our agenda. And then we had other guys who, you know, like, you know, had NBA aspirations and was trying to get out. And, you know, Greg Monroe just came in. You know, they were talking he was one and done and stuff like that. So, you know, that sophomore year was a tough year just for us because, you know, we had different agendas. And, you know, you can't really work like that if, you know, everybody got their own agenda. You know, it's kind of like the me factor mm-hmm. that we have on our team. Like, oh, I got to get mine. Or the I factor said, I got to get mine. Or I got to do this and I got to do that. And not really, you know, we weren't really being a team. So that big issue was rough. Mm-hmm. I think we won like, what was it, like 19 or 15 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just a bad year that year. And then, like I said, that sophomore year, pretty much the rest of our class went to the draft, from Blake Griffin to James Harden to Eric Gordon went the year before, Johnny Flynn, Dante Green left that the first year, Johnny Flynn left the next year. So by the time our junior and senior year came, it might have been like five or six of us from that McDonald's class that was still in college at the time. Everybody else in the NBA, pretty much. So,
Austin, I have a follow up question, kind of to what you were just talking about. You talked about seeing guys who were in your McDonald's All American class going to the NBA. I'm pretty sure that you, without even naming in some of the guys, you probably were like, "Man, I'm better than him." You know, like you had that thought. Was there any outside pressure from, you know, friends, family, or anyone for you to consider going to the NBA early?
After my freshman year, I mean, I was talking to people. Some people were telling me just to try it. But, you know, with that, like, at that time, like, once you pretty much put your name in, you kind of like just put your name in, right? That was kind of like what it was. Like, not like now, like when you can put your name in and then, you know, leave it in for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and then take your name out and then you can go back to school. At that time, it was once you put your name in, you probably got like 3 days and then it's either you got to take your name out or you got to keep it in, pretty much. So you didn't really get the chance to really see what they were talking about. But I had people talk to me about it, and I just felt like it wasn't a good decision. I mean, yeah, We came in with the McDonald's buzz and, you know, the All-American buzz, but, you know, I felt like I didn't have that crazy of a year to even, like, you know, put my name in my freshman year. Sophomore year, I felt like that year was just too disappointing just to even think about it at that time, because we just didn't play well. We didn't play well as a team or as individuals out there to really, you know, put our name in like that. So, I didn't do a sophomore year. But yeah, I mean, I had people talk to me and stuff like that, and, you know, saying I should try it out or think about it and stuff like that. But, you know, I just felt it wasn't the best decision for me at the time.
So, Austin.
And also.
Go ahead, Will. You had it. Go ahead.
Also, a follow-up question. You went undrafted after your final year, your senior year in college, and you played on multiple countries and a few continents. Where's your favorite place that you played professionally overseas?
Italy, I would say.
Mm-hmm. What made it so special?
I would say because just the competition out there. I feel like the competition was, you know, up there with, you know, what was going on, what's happening in the States. You know, and they're diehard basketball fans. You would think they just soccer fans out there, but they're diehard, you know, basketball fans out there. So the games are crazy. I mean, the fans are fighting the other fans, and they shooting fireworks in the middle of the game when we score. Like, every basket you score is like a goal in soccer, kind of. Like, just a little simple free throw, they going crazy in there. And I'm talking about, like, a free throw with, like, 8 minutes left in the first quarter. You make a free throw, they going crazy like it's a goal. So, like, they're diehard fans. Like, they really care about their basketball out there. So, yeah, I would say Italy was one of the best for me.
So, Austin, you mentioned, you know, the Princeton offense. We had DeMar Johnson, DJ, on the show, and he mentioned you, actually. He feels that if you weren't playing in the Princeton offense at Georgetown, your numbers would have been better elsewhere if you didn't have to play in the Princeton offense. What do you think, man?
I mean, it's a little inside joke. Most of the guys at Georgetown that played in that system, it was like, dog, if you score 16 points, that might be like 22 somewhere else. Like, at Georgetown, you get anywhere from like 14 to like 18. Like, you happy because you're like, well, anywhere else, that's 20 some points. And then that's how we think. Like, we'd be joking around with that. You know, like anywhere from 14 to 18, you got about 20-something points.
That's real. That's real, though. That is real. Because you and Jeff Green are the same way. Jeff Green made 16 like it was 30. It was like you and Jeff Green were the same at that aspect.
Yeah. So, like, but anyway, I'm kind of, you know, special in that Princeton offense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm probably like one or two guys who've had multiple 30 games in the
mm-hmm.
Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm in good company over there. So I think St. Juan said, like, me and maybe DSR are probably like the only two with multiple 30 point games at Georgetown. So honestly, that's like 60 points anywhere else. So, so, you know, that's good company over there at Georgetown.
Hey Austin, you also have a podcast too with Chris Wright. Can you tell all our listeners about your podcast?
So yeah, me and Chris Wright started a podcast. It's called The Dog Talk. You know, we just felt like, you know, Georgetown fans needed something like this. Because Mac McClung, you know, said a little something like he didn't feel like, you know, the program was like a family.
Mm.
So kind of like me and Chris just wanted to start somewhere, you know. We wanted to show that, you know, yes, Georgetown is what it is, but we are a family. We do stick together. We are, you know, we are one big family.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what Matthew McConaughey was talking about, we just wanted to, you know, let people know that, you know, it's, you know, we're a family, and we do, you know, look out for one each other. We're there pretty much. We just didn't want to, you know, have them, you know, go ahead and say what he got to say and just step off, kind of. So we wanted to, you know, bring light to that. So that's how the podcast started.
Why would he? I don't know.
Because he didn't get his numbers. He played bad. That's why, man. He trying to blame other aspects, man. He need to be on him, man.
I don't know. I have no idea why he said that. I feel like he shouldn't have said it at all. I mean, I feel like that's something you probably just keep to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get it. Maybe you was upset about something, whatever it was. But you could have just kept that one to yourself. Say whatever else you want. Yeah. Just leave that alone.
Yeah.
Like, you don't got to say that. You gone. You going to wherever you going. Like, you don't got to say nothing. Just leave that stuff alone, man. Like,
man, the tape don't lie, man. No, the tape don't lie. That's all I'm gonna say. Tape don't lie.
Right. We get it. Like, you hurt, or, you know, you didn't play a lot at the end of the season and stuff like that. But come on, dog. Like, yeah, you put your name in and then said you were coming back and ended up transferring anyway. Like that says a lot about you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you wasn't gonna come back, just say you weren't coming back. Like. Yeah, I think about it. You are a big part of the team. So you saying you're coming back. So now, you know, you're going to be a big part of the team. We're going to need you. So now, you know, our focus is going to be, you know, you, because you are one of our best players. So, you know, and then you come out and just talk about you transferring and going to Texas Tech. Like, that's bullshit, man. So,
yeah.
No, I'm with you. Blair showed out, though. At least Blair showed out.
You still were attached, you know, even if you did decide to leave Georgetown, you still were a part of that family, you know. You don't have to, you know, sit on the way out. You know, I didn't understand that, me personally.
That's okay. Yeah. Stop being PC. He was a sucker for doing that, man. Stop being PC. He was a sucker. He didn't have to do that, though, for real. He really didn't. Like, he didn't. And so, Austin, is there anything you would like to add or plug? You know what I mean? Before you step off the show? Social media.
When y'all get a chance, check out Dog Talk Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We air our stuff usually on Sundays at 11. You know, if you want any more updates, we're on Twitter at the Dog Talk 101 and on Instagram at Dog Talk 101. So, you know, check us out. And, you know, appreciate you guys having me on, man. You know, it's good talking to y'all. And I really do appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, man, thanks for being on. We appreciate it, for real.
We appreciate you, man. Appreciate you making the time for us.
No problem, man. No problem.
All right, man. You stay blessed. Thank you again, man.
Y'all do too, man.
All right. That was Austin Freeman, former Hoya, also the Master Great. That was good, man. A lot of insight.
A lot of good information.
It sure
about,
was.
You know, during this time, you know, him coming up in Prince George's County, maturing his game, then going to, you know, DeMatha, then playing at one of the legendary high school programs in America, and playing for one of the most legendary AAU programs at DC Team Assault, then on to, you know, Georgetown.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a great interview.
It was a great interview. All right, we'll talk more about Coach Thompson after the break. Patrick Waring from the NBS Sports Hour podcast will join the show after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Thing. You dig.
Deuces.
There you go.
I want to ask John Thompson. All these folks that say, well, John is a racist, and we've talked about it in the past. How do you feel you should be perceived, and do you even care that you happen to be the most successful big black college?
Well, I don't give dignity to the answer, George. You understand what I'm saying? I'm, again, as I've said to you before, I think we've talked about it, it's amazing. My life, by its nature, has been far more integrated socially and from a work standpoint than 90% of the people who question and challenge what I am. You know, and I find that extremely amusing that I look at these people who have no form of integration in their life in any way other than the fact that they may come in periodically and interview somebody and say this guy's their best friend because he'll give them a good story. And then they'll look at John Thompson and say that John Thompson is something, but I haven't given a lot of time to it, you know, sitting down and thinking about it. And I certainly don't give any dignity to the foolish people who ask me those foolish questions. And
you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and Wole. Yeah, that was Patrick. That was John, the late John Thompson, being interviewed by the late George Michael. If you all from the DMV, you know about George Michael. So I'm just giving y'all a little something with George Michael interviewing John Thompson. I'm gonna patch in the fellas. Here we go. All right. Right now, we have Patrick Waring from NBS Sports Hour podcast. What's up, Pat?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
We're doing good, man. So, you know, Pat, your podcast covers Hoyas thoroughly. What came to your mind when you heard about the passing of Coach Thompson?
I mean, just kind of to echo, you know, a lot of other people's feelings, man. I mean, it was tough. You know, it was a tough way to start off the morning. You know, I heard early, I kind of got up and looked at my phone and seen a lot of alerts. So, I mean, the first thought was kind of like, man, you know, just kind of had to sit back and just kind of had to just think about it and process it for a little bit.
So, for you, what do you remember most about, most about Coach Thompson?
I think for me, I mean, just, you know, to start out, I mean, you know, Coach was the reason why I'm a Georgetown fan, you know, just because of everything that he did. I mean, I pretty much support all the local teams anyways, born and raised in the area, but I think the reason why I was such a big Georgetown fan and why to this day I still am was because of him. You know, I was younger watching games, but it didn't take me long to figure out what was going on. And then once I went back, I was able to go back and kind of do my history do my research, talk to people. Once I kind of seen everything that he's done, the work he put in, what he was about, I think that kind of drew me to Georgetown even more. So I think without him being the coach, probably like a lot of people, but definitely for me, without him being the coach, I don't think I'd be such a big fan of the program right now.
Mm. You're listening to the Urban Sports. Hey, so
go ahead, bro.
All right, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Let me do the read real quick. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. We are chatting with Patrick Waring from the NBS Sports Hour podcast. All right, go ahead, Will.
let me ask you this, Pat. John Thompson Jr., I think more than any coach, kind of is the program at Georgetown, you know, Georgetown University, right? When we think of him, we think of, you know, Craig Escherich, who was there after him, then JT3, and now Patrick Ewing as the coach. How will Georgetown kind of keep that culture and that mystique going forward without John Thompson Jr. being alive?
It's a good question, and that's something that I actually thought about, too. I was thinking about that earlier today, to be honest with you. And it's going to be harder with him actually not there. I mean, Ronnie Thompson's, and you know, he's with the program still, but without having Big John there, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, to see what happens. I mean, my hope is that Patrick Ewing's still given a fair chance and he's still given an opportunity to get things going in the right direction. But it's hard to say. I mean, we know we're in the business of wins and losses, so we have to see how that plays out in the court. But I mean, I think people will also consider the fact of what Big John did there, and I think they'll also consider the fact of what Patrick Ewing did there, you know, along with John. So maybe that gives him enough time that he needs to kind of turn things around. But without having him around, I mean, it's going to be different for sure.
Yeah, I guess for me, that's my chief concern, because I know that when John Thompson Jr. was alive, Patrick Ewing, you know, he hasn't got necessarily netted the results that everyone thought he would have thus far and this quickly. But I know that Coach Thompson would advocate for, you know, the chancellor, for the president, and for the AD to provide him more time and let everyone know, hey, he's going to get this right. He just needs more time. I guess my biggest concern is without him here as, you know, kind of that biggest advocate, will that, you know, John Thompson, you know, that Coach Thompson lineage die with Patrick Ewing? Would they decide?
Yeah. Or,
you know, of the Georgetown family without him there.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, it's a fair question to ask, and I think that's something that we're going to see. I think on the flip side of that, you know, the type of person that Patrick Ewing is too, he probably would say he doesn't want to have it any other way though too. I mean, he's a guy that come in, I think he's shown that while he did have the blessings of Big John, I mean, I think he feels confident as being his own person and you know, wanting to go out and wanting to prove to everybody that he's the man for the job too. So, I mean, as far as like being accountable and things like that, I think that's something that you know, he's up for. But I mean, the name on that athletic building still there. Mm-hmm. That statue is still there. When we walk in, people know, you know, who was the guy that put that banner up, the Final Fours, and you know, in the history. So, I think at least for a while, I think things will be good. But like, goes back again, wins and losses. I think it's going to be the ultimate decision. At least down the road a little bit.
So what about?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Are you all right?
So we all know that wins and losses, you know, play a major part of it. What about the loss of the players and or the inability to bring in that one blue or those. You know, get things going in the direction that I know that ultimately the Georgetown fan base wants it to. And, you know, and I have to preface that by saying Patrick Ewing has not done a bad job at Georgetown. You know, this past year was his only year with an under 500 record.
Yeah, I think last year was bad. I mean, there's no other way to, you know, put it. You know, it's just between the things that happened as far as the guys leaving, between the, you know, the incidents that, you know, whether those things happened or didn't happen, either way, it led to players leaving the team. So I think that situation, you know, to me, you know, is definitely something that, you know, people want to keep their eye on, and they want to hope that those things don't continue to happen. So I think between that and just the way that the whole season went, the way the whole season ended, you know, where we're at right now in the world, maybe just, you know, stuff just happens sometimes. So going forward, as far as recruiting, it looks like they have a pretty nice class coming in this year. They're already putting the groundwork on the 21 class. So I just think from here on out, they just have to make sure they're going in the right direction, they're trending in the right direction. Grab a couple of these local guys, grab guys that fit your system. So I think as long as he can kind of bounce back from it and keep moving, I think we'll be okay. But, you know, we don't want that to be the trend, I guess, because if it is, I think that's going to be alarming.
Okay.
Hey, Pat, I just want to quickly ask, you heard Austin Freeman, he referred to Coach Thompson as the godfather of basketball. I mean, not just here in the D.C. area, but in general, which is, I mean, huge when you think about guys like Jerry West, who's a logo, John Wooden, of course. I mean, there's a lot of guys that come to mind where maybe you can give somebody that title. So for you, who is John Thompson, or where does he rank for you? And I'm gonna stay here in the DMV. A lot of people will say, hey, Len Bias is the first the first person you think of, the first person that comes to mind when you're talking about DC basketball culture. But is Big John number one for you?
I think so, man. You know, of course I'm biased, but, you know, I got to think about the big picture too. And, you know, that's another thought I had. I mean, definitely locally, I definitely would put him up there. But then I just look at everything he's had to deal with. Like, we mentioned some of these other names and some of these other coaches, but I think, were they under the same type of situations that Big John had, you know, the things he had to deal with coming up, the thing, you know, the obstacles he had to go through as far as everything, as far as dealing with issues in America, with race, with just dealing with, you know, the struggles of having to prove that, you know, you're worthy of these positions. Mm-hmm. So I think he's not only dealt with the opponent when they're game planning and when they're playing the games, but he's had to go through so much other stuff, you know, to put coaches now in a situation where they don't have to deal with it as much. So I would put him up there. I mean, this is a guy, I mean, when he got the job at Georgetown, when he came in, I mean, what they won a few games before that, I think I seen a quote before where the school told him, just try to win the NIT every now and then, and they would be happy. I mean, he turned it into a powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to the Final Four, won the championship, was close to winning, you know, if not 2-3 in a span, getting to the tournament every year. So I think what he's done and you know, looking at the whole situation, I would put him up there. The thing with Big John, though, is we can talk Godfather. I think that's a good word. We can talk about what he did basketball-wise, but his stuff went beyond, you know, basketball. When you want to talk about everything that he did as far as standing up for his players, as far as standing up for students, as far as the community and everything. I think he's definitely exceeded further than basketball. And you just look at it. I mean, we talked about it before. Just think about Black America. Think about people that weren't even in the area. I mean, you see Georgetown gear, the brand was strong. Think about everybody that we like, you know, the rappers, everybody from Ice Cube, Chuck D, you know, his stuff extended, further than D.C. So, I just think the impact he had overall is so much greater than basketball, and it's so much greater than a lot of people think. So I would put him up there.
He's definitely up there.
Yeah, trendsetter, definitely. That's real talk. Big time within the culture.
Yeah, definitely. And also, he's a guy that wasn't scared to confront Rayful Edmonds. We're talking that, and that's big time, you know, because he was befriending some of his players. So he was searching for him, and he had a conversation with him. What college coach that you know would have that type of discussion with a person like Rayful Edmonds? Like, if you think about it, you know what I mean? Big John would just wasn't scared, wanted all the smoke, and he was all about protecting his kids. And we've seen that with how, again, we mentioned it before, but how much love he has for how much love his former players have for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Rayful, the story with Rayful, I mean, of course, we know the story. And, you know, different people have, you know, different thoughts mm-hmm. about how exactly it went down. But, I mean, it basically came to the fact where, you know, Thompson met with him. Rayful had a lot of respect for Thompson, too, though. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a lot of respect for Thompson. He was a huge Georgetown fan. You know, he had his other life and the other stuff he did. But, I mean, he had that connection, again, through Georgetown, mm-hmm. you know, through the stuff that Big John did. So he did back away from, you know, Turner and Mourning. And that was another example of, like you said, Thompson sticking up for his players. I mean, look what he did when everybody was making comments, well, not everybody, when a lot of people were making all these comments about Patrick Ewing, mm-hmm. he can't read, you know, he stood up for him there. When Allen Iverson, you know, he not only took the chance for Iverson, but he protected Iverson when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when people do things for you, you know, you remember. That's why a guy gets emotional, and that's why guys get emotional. You hear all the stories now of everybody kind of with the memories, and, you know, they're paying homage and, you know, honoring him. Is because of everything he did for him, you know. Those are only the stories that we know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about, you know, the things that he did for these guys that, you know, no one knows about, or the things he did for other people in the community? Now, I know no one's perfect, so, you know, people may say things, or they may have feelings, or it may be situations that happened with them that people didn't like. But, you know, I think overall the positives that he did definitely outweigh everything else.
Definitely. So, Pat, before we let you go, how can folks catch your podcast and let our listeners know how
it is? The NBS Sports Hour. So we're on Twitter and Instagram, and that's at NBS Sports Hour. And then me personally on Twitter, it's at Waring, Waring Patrick. EATRICK. So anybody that wants to check us out, you know, definitely you can find us there. We try to put out a pod once a week, at least if possible, talking everything from sports, music, movies, culture, just pretty much, you know, whatever's going on in the world. But definitely want to thank you guys for having me on. I think Austin, too, man, I was listening to him. I think, you know, he definitely put in work. I think he's humble and I think he's laid back, man. But that guy put in work when he was at Georgetown, mm-hmm. man. So I definitely think, you know, he definitely deserves all the credit and recognition that he gets.
Oh, man, appreciate you, Pat. Really, we really do. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Take it easy, man.
All right.
All right, subscribe to, and again, that's Patrick Waring. Make sure you check him out on social media. That's at Waring Patrick. So make sure you give him a follow. All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, SportsJourney.com. All right, we'll see you. Everything good? Ray, everything good? We're good? Anybody want to say anything before we close the show out? No? Yes?
I'm tired of social distancing. it's time to do the show in person again. The phone thing is, it's okay, you know, but because we continue to do it, but we continue to put out some pretty good content, man. Thanks for everybody, of course. Man, I'm like trying to juggle all this stuff on the phone. And
I feel you, bro.
It's frustrating.
Anyway, time close.
That's my thought, man.
All right.
Thanks all, I guess.
Let me close this joint out. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Will T? For ages, Will T? Oh, man, y'all. All right, you dig?
Will T watching the game.
I know, yeah, you dig?
Deuces.
You make a lead us out, big homie.